The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Beyond and hello and welcome once again to IGN's weekly PlayStation Show podcast Beyond. I'm your host, Max Scoville. This is episode 819. And shockingly, we have some big, huge, extra slim news to talk about. let's get into that. I'm joined today by Jada Griffin and Brian Altano, my dear friends. It feels weird to introduce you guys, but here we are. Miraculously, Sony posted a blog thing announcing something huge before we recorded, not immediately afterwards. And it is the long rumored PS5 Slim, which is dropping sometime this holiday season for prices. Let's talk about it. This is
not even just long rumored, leaked, full on leaked. Like we covered this a couple weeks ago, where somebody was kind of like just rotating what, you know, looked like a factory model of this, and we were like, that's odd. So it's just like a smaller PS5, but it has like weird like Oakley segments on the side. Great. Well, you know, could be fake. Who knows? Nope. Totally real. That's exactly what they revealed today. So, yay.
Well, theirs didn't have the shiny little metal ring stand at the bottom.
That is true.
This is definitely, if you haven't seen it, go look up pictures online or just use the power of the theater of your mind. They made this little ring base. I don't know what I can't tell what it reminds me of. It looks vaguely familiar, but it looks nothing.
It looks like Aloy's focus a little bit.
That's kind it. Of. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. it. Yeah. It's, yeah. But yeah, it's this little metal ring that you have to clip on the bottom for it to stand up, which makes it seem much more lamp-like than it was. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of like an air purifier, you know?
Yeah.
I guess
the big takeaways here is it's basically reduced in size by 30%, weight by 18%, and 24% compared to the, you know, digital or physical disc-based versions. And it's got four separate cover panels. But what's interesting too, and this was another rumor, there's the stand, the optional stand, which you can now purchase for $30.
$30. Yep.
Okay.
And it's compatible with the old ones? Is that it or is it just sold separately?
Yep. No, it
no. It works with... So this one is specifically for the new model and it's included, but there's a new one that's coming for the older ones as well that will be sold for $30, and I imagine will follow the same kind of design with the metal ring. So
what
if you don't like
a gamer. Wow.
So if you don't like the boring black plastic one you have right now, you can give Sony $30 and get one with a metal ring.
Yeah. You can also buy like rare coins and put them underneath the legs of your table in case you don't want to look at them. Like
this is such a dumb thing.
The big takeaway here, like the big TLDR, is that there is a $500 physical version of the system and a $450 digital version of the system, which means that in America, finally, I say finally, not in an excited way because I couldn't wait for it, but this, you know, creeping increase of luxury pricing has finally hit home here in the States. The PS5 has gotten a price increase just on the digital model. Now, say you get the digital model, you spend $450, $50 more than you could have bought it for yesterday, but it's slightly smaller. But then in a couple of weeks, you get buyer's remorse or something like that. And you're like, I wish I could shove some discs in this thing. Well, good news, because if you have an additional $80, bringing the grand total up to $530, you can get an optional disc drive that you can pop off one of the side panels on this thing, plug in this weird beer gut and then put discs in there forever. So thank you, Jim Ryan, for this parting gift before you quit the
what
company.
What on earth is this?
What is happening?
It's okay, so bizarre. So if you want to play discs on your new slim PS5, it is an extra $50 thereabouts. If you want to do digital stuff, it's $50 less. It's still $50 more than a digital version was at launch and is now for the most part. But then if you want discs after the fact, it's $80. What?
Yeah. Yep.
If you want a brand new smaller PS5 that plays discs, you can buy one for $500 with no price increase. It will be smaller than the launch model PS5. But if you want a digital PS5 that plays discs, it will be $530.
I guess the only upside here is that maybe the launch PS5s will be cheaper if you buy them refurbished or something. That's an option. So there is one improvement we should call out, that it is a bump in storage size. It is now 1 terabyte, you know, the size of the PS4 Pro when it launched 8 years ago, right. Whatever, instead of 825, which means that it'll probably have actually 825 gigs of usable space, you know, because there's always that, you know, like the sales tax takes up 800 gigs or
yeah,
you know, 60
for
gigs
me,
or whatever.
One for you or whatever.
I thought the original said it was 1 terabyte right off the bat. So like, and like, it's just 825 in general. Like the storage is the same in my mind.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, it's we're getting a whole, it's a whole other can of,
the OS takes
state
up,
worms.
Yeah. A whole bunch of, but, so what, okay, so what's confusing to me is, I swear to God, like 4 days ago, Sony launched like a whole new line of faceplates for the launch model PS5s. It's called the Deep Earth Collection, and they are like in American flag colors because in the center
that was
of the world is the,
was that the
good
that was
old
the
red,
last,
white, and blue.
That was the last direct, right?
Yeah, blue, red, and I think the other one's actually silver. But yeah,
yeah.
It looked white in the direct to me, so I totally get that. But yeah,
you know what's at the center of the Earth is magma. They could have made a cool neon orange one, but where's the fun in that when you could just have, I don't know, just ferrous iron particles? What a thrill!
Yeah. So, so those won't work on these. So I guess get those if you want them now. I don't know if they're going to continue to make faceplates or, you know, accessories for the launch model PS5s. You would think so, because they're constantly bragging about how many they've sold, which they've sold millions and millions. It's been a tremendously successful product. Mm-hmm. This to me, and not to be completely cynical about this, but this seems like it exists because Sony internally figured out a way to save a ton of money on manufacturing, and they're passing those savings on to us, the consumer, by increasing the price. So
yeah, I mean, we always get like a mid-cycle refresh. We always get like a slim version or two in the case of the PS3. And you know, the older version always looks a little older because of that, because there's a new thing to compare it to. But on the bright side, the newer versions usually come with a price cut, or you know, they're the same price but they're new. And in this case,
or come with a bigger hard drive.
Yeah, there's
like
some
that. Yeah,
or like a slightly different controller, or you know, it's, you know, less cable. I don't know. This is kind of a drag, you know.
It is. It's because it's. I don't think it's I don't think it's any better looking. It's a little less clunky. It still can't lay on its side. It can't sleep.
Look at that little kickstand.
It can't sleep on its side without that little. Yeah, what the hell is that?
What is that?
Yeah, it's like there's like a little foldabout. Like a
what, like on a bike?
Folds out. it looks like a bike kickstand. Well,
can I, for $80 extra, can I buy pegs so my friend can ride on the side of it? Like, what is this?
You can, yeah.
A little bell, a basket.
You could put a couple of baseball cards in the spokes and get a little ring.
I don't even know. Like, I'm looking at the other pictures compared to that.
What
I'm like,
is,
where does that come out? Like, where is that located?
What the hell is that?
It looks like an extra screw that they forgot to take out of the picture. And it's like, but it does.
Oh! It's wait. Is it? Is there like a little thing inside the crack that pops down?
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing so.
The thing that drives me nuts about this is it's still like all sort of space age and curvy and looks like a turret from Portal 2, but the new disk drive is super angular, so it sort of feels like it's a step in a more like like right angled direction, but it's not, you know, like I really kind of wish they'd gone something more just hard, like angular angles, not like all these weird space curves.
The PS5 controller, the DualSense, looking exactly the same as it should, sitting next to this thing, just it makes it feel like when one of your friends buys like a clothes that don't really work for them, and you just kind of sit there and be like, yeah, all right.
Like you, it's like when you invite them over and you invite them to an outing, it's like, all right, it's picture time. Like, well, guess you're gonna look like this in our pictures forever now.
Yeah.
Thanks,
like
dude.
If one of your friends was like, I'm a fedora guy now, you're like, all right, I mean, well, the movie starts at 7, so we should leave, I guess. That kickstand looks like clip art of a guy spinning a basketball. It's just so
it's so weird, because like I'm looking at the other one where the digital, where you're attaching, they have the drive kind of pulled out. It doesn't look where like there's anything there. Like,
no, what is Jada? What is that thing?
Like, it does look like if you look at the digital like one pulled apart where they're adding the drive, it looks like there's like maybe a little clasp or something that you can open from the top half.
Yeah.
So maybe it's like hidden in there.
It's and a secret coin bank. You can put all your quarters in there, and then if you
please don't
extra
put quarters
good,
or any coins in your PlayStation.
You can jam baseball
kids.
Cards in there, much like a bicycle, and it will make a cool noise like a motor.
Red, okay. can we zoom in on this little finger? Is there any way we can get an enhance on this little kickstand?
This has got to be thrilling radio for all of you.
Because I want us to get a look. Because I've never seen anything like this on a video game console before, and Sony historically has. You know, they make really slick looking hardware, but this generation has just been. Wait, look at that little nub. What is that thing?
Okay. Oh, it appears to be. Is it clear plastic? Because that makes it look like a real bargain.
Oh man, I really hope it's. It could be. I thought it was metal at first, but now looking at close up, it looks like it could be clear plastic.
I don't want to be too negative on this.
Yes, no,
that's
for
not
sure.
True. We can keep being negative about this for 45 minutes, but. I know you just did.
I already have a PS5. This is not a pro model. This is more money for a clear thing.
This was me changing the subject. But there's lots more to make fun of, including the lineup of movies that are coming to PlayStation Plus. We'll get to that in just a second. But we do also want to say some nice things about PlayStation, which we're going to get in a second. We have a bunch of very nice fond memories of a different PlayStation from a long time ago when we were all happier. The PlayStation 2
had a little kickstand on it.
It turned 23, and contrary to the words of Blink-182, people do love you when you're 23. We'll get to that in a second. But first, I want to talk about the movies that are coming to PlayStation Plus. This was a big old sort of surprise announcement, a nice little subtle value added. You know, they widely publicized the price increase that was coming, but they didn't actually tell us what it was for. Apparently what it's for is access to a curated selection of up to, but not exceeding, I guess, 100 movies that you can stream on demand through the Sony Pictures Core as part of your membership. And there are certainly some movies on this list. Admittedly, there are some on here that I want to watch, but they're ones that are like weird, old, forgotten things that most people don't want to watch, such as 1995's Screamers, starring Peter Weller, about screaming aliens on like a prison planet that I remember the trailer scared me in third grade, and I want to go back and see what it's about. Most people don't want to watch that movie. Looper is on there. Anacondas with more than one of them, multiple snakes.
You can get a full list view of the collection if you head on down to Walmart and you look at the $5 DVD bin.
This is some $5 DVDs right here. They have Sniper, Sniper 3, Sniper Reloaded, Sniper Ultimate Kill. They have several Starship Troopers sequels, but not Starship Troopers. They have Boondock Saints 2, All Saints Day, but no Boondock Saints. They have all the Kingsmen, which is not part of the Kingsmen series. They have Barney's version, which is not part of the Barney series.
Barney's Kingsmen.
They're not related. They're two different films. All the Kingsmen is some historical thing, and Barney's version is Paul Giamatti being, I think, problematic. I don't know. They've got
this
Black
is
Dynamite.
Not the per- this is
Blue
not
Thunder.
The purple dinosaur.
No, not the purple dinosaur. No. It's no. Fifth Element. There's some cool stuff on here. There's admittedly stuff that
there's the Kingsglaive Final Fantasy 15, so you can finally get the full story of Final Fantasy 15 if you missed that anime movie thing. So you can go and watch that and then play Final Fantasy 15. Mm-hmm.
You can watch the Final Fantasy, The Spirits Within, find out what Dr. Aki Ross is up to on Earth, that faraway distant fantasy planet. Yeah, there's a bunch on here. I will say that I can understand why they didn't super duper publicize this list, because it's kind of some whatever additions, you know, for whatever the price increase for PS Plus was. I don't think this ain't it, you know?
No.
Uh-huh.
Hopefully hopefully this is the first of more to come. I'm really hoping that this is just kind of like, and not just like more movies. I hope that Sony is looking into more value added propositions for at increasing that price of PS Plus. Like movies is just the first thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Maybe they're going to throw in music. Maybe there's going to be a deal with Spotify or something like that. Or
sure. I mean, Johnny Mnemonic is on there. I recommended that a couple episodes ago. So go check that out if you haven't. And there's Resident Evil Damnation and Vendetta. Those are separate things. They just Damnation and Vendetta. Real Residents of Evil in here. Yeah, so that's that news. That's out there. If you want to watch movies on your PlayStation instead of just playing on it, you can play some movies instead. Let's say some nice things about PlayStation.
Yes,
let's talk about some. Let's say some fond memories. Yeah, Jada, you went in the Beyond Facebook group and you got a bunch of wonderful contributions from our dear, lovely listeners. Some memory cards, if you will, about that wonderful old PlayStation 2, which is probably, I feel like it's now, that console is now old enough to have memories of a console itself and be nostalgic because it's in its 20s. What do we got? What do we got? What's a good one?
Yeah, so I'll start off with one because she mentioned a game that I very much loved during my time with the PS2. I apologize if I mispronounce your name, but Ikra Asad Khan. I absolutely love Final Fantasy X-2 on the PS2 as a teenager. My father saw a PlayStation game with three girls on the cover and grabbed it for his daughter. I love the magical girl tropes and the sphere changing. I didn't care that I hadn't played 10. Who is this Titus guy that Yuna kept talking about? No idea. Yuna had two guns, which was totally badass, and she could change into a songstress and cast buffs and debuffs with the power of song and dance. That's all I cared about. I got two light-up bubble guns as an adult, and I hold them the way Yuna holds the tiny bees when I run with them. I think I will channel my inner badass Yuna forever. You know what? There's a lot of things you can say about Final Fantasy X-2, but I freaking loved this game, and I think that the dress sphere battle system is one of the more creative battle systems that they've ever done in a Final Fantasy game. The fact that you get these different cards, I can't remember what they were called, or I guess grids, that you can slot in specific jobs. So it's like, oh, so I want to do Warrior. I want to do Dark Knight. I want to also have Mascot and all these other ones. And then mid-battle, as conditions change, you rotate between them mid-battle, you change jobs, and you get buffs for going through them. Like, it was such a cool and creative thing, and I'm really happy you got this game and that you fell in love with this one. It was just solid experience.
I have questions about the bubble guns. I like that.
Yes.
She just was like, and I got bubble guns as an adult, and I used to do this when I run them. And it's like, what? I have more questions about that. Maybe we should do a bubble gun podcast and see if we can get some follow-up.
Akeem brought a bubble gun on the podcast last week.
So there's a precedent. So it's not
there
that,
is a precedence.
Yeah.
Yes,
Ryan, do you have any bubble guns?
I have bubble gum.
Do you have bubble guns, though?
I don't have any bubble guns, actually.
Hmm.
My child has a lot of bubble wands and bubble water or whatever it's called, soap.
But she goes for melee over ranged bubbles, I guess.
Yeah, that's, you know, sure. I think bubble guns are cheating.
I almost bought a bubble gun for my cat because he loves bubbles. Little Atreus loves to chase bubbles, but I went for the stationary, like kind of bubble machine. So I went like kind of industrial turret based with my bubbles.
Fair enough. Yeah, good old tower defense.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, tower defense. Yeah. Let's see. What else do we have? Kevin Garaventa. I got my own PS2 after my college roommate showed me God of War, and I had to have one so I could play the whole game for myself in my room, as well as Shadow of the Colossus and Guitar Hero. Excellent picks for the PS2 era. For Christmas, I took my PS2 home and had my younger brother Tim play the opening chapter of God of War on my parents' projector. I hope Tim was at least of of age, because that was an immature game.
Oh, it's
on the wall. Kratos measured about 6 inches, while the main Hydra head was probably 8 feet tall and shrieked with the full force of my dad's speaker system. All Tim could say was a single curse word when the Hydra screamed in Kratos' face at the start of the fight. I want to know what the curse word was. He did not share that. I did something similar with this back in high school. I used to run the booth up in our for our theater plays, and we had a projector set up there with a like paper on the wall, and so I'd set up consoles in there and we'd play games in the booth while we were like rehearsing. So in between light and sound cues, because I knew all my stuff, I was just like, okay, I'm listening for this line, but I'm also playing Sonic or playing whatever on this PS2 up in this booth. And then we also did that for what do they call it? It's been so long since I've done
rap party.
Thank you. Rap party, my brain. During the rap party, we'd bring down the whole projector in the actual auditorium for the theater, and we'd play like Halo and
that's
so cool.
Burnout and stuff on it. It was so much fun.
Yeah, something I don't think we appreciate enough, and this is one of those things the kids don't know how good they have it, but TVs used to be small, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like the smallest TV you can get like as a flat screen is like, unless you're going out of your way, it's like something like 32 inches or whatever. And that was like a decent sized CRT back in the day. Mm-hmm. And like a projector was nuts. That was unheard of. Like, it was wild to have something that big in your house playing games on it. And I also loved that, like, saying that, oh yeah, like Kratos was only 6 inches tall. And I was like, it's not a very big projector. And then I remembered that, like, yeah, in the old games, he was like, you know, yeah, they would kind of scaling it out.
Mm-hmm.
But now he takes up like a quarter of the screen because he's just lumbering around and right in front of the camera, just down in front there.
Yeah. Freaking good old God of War. What were your guys's? Do you guys have PS2 memories?
Yeah. I was thinking about this before the show. And like, when I think about like my favorite PS2 memory, the first thing that pops in my head is Shadow of the Colossus.
Mm.
Like, by far. It's just one of those games where I guess I knew that like Sony was doing awesome stuff first party, because they always had been. Mm-hmm. And I knew they could do like quirky, goofy mascot platforming stuff, and I knew they could do, you know, tactical stealth shooter stuff and all that, but like I'd never really seen them do something that was like that kind of art house and prestige at the same time. And it as like a huge Zelda fan, it just completely connected with me. Like, it felt like not that it like felt like grown up Zelda or something like that, but I think that like it tackled like mature themes in a very different way than I'd ever seen a video game do before. It handled death in a really interesting way, in that like you quickly, you know, not necessarily to spoil such an ancient game, but like you quickly realize that like you were not necessarily the best person in the world to go around and slaughter these colossus, and they were these hulking incredible things, like on a size and a scale I'd never really experienced in a video game before. Zelda had big bosses, right? It had giant spiders that fell down from the ceiling, you know. You fought, you know, Pig Ganon and stuff like that, but like these things were gigantic hulking puzzles, and you climbed onto their backs and their bodies, and they soared around, and they screamed in agony as you stabbed them and stuff like that. You would stick blades into their heads and their skulls and their backs, and they were covered in fur, and like the mood, the lighting, the way everything came together in this game, it just had this like really distinct sadness to it. And this is a studio that like really like kept that theme going, right? Like they.
Yep.
Like Ico did it. Last Guardian did it. Like they're unmatched in terms of, I think, just like, and I think like FromSoft came close with like Bloodborne and stuff like that, in terms of just like there's an immense deep sadness to this game.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's not what you're looking for when you sit down to play a video game, because video games are supposed to be fun and you're the hero.
Well, but this really one is like, yeah, it really is very deconstructed Zelda, in that it's like structurally it's so much like the first one, where it's like, take this, it's dangerous to go alone, that kind of thing. And it just turns you loose in this, you know, big world, and you got to go figure out what to do. But it feels like, you know, when a fancy restaurant does like, oh, this is our deconstructed hamburger, and it looks nothing like a hamburger, and it's none of the charm of a hamburger, but it tastes sort of like a hamburger. It's kind of like that, where, you know, it's not, you know, it is that archetypal, like, boy saves the princess, but it's also got all these like sad, it's got all these sad artsy themes to it.
Yeah, no, I mean, you can look at that from the color palette alone. You can be like, oh, this is very kind of muted or whatnot. Yeah,
well, like, I also love, and I think this is specifically a PS2 thing, but touching on like a lot of our nostalgia is like, through a CRT darkly, like it's very much like there's that haze that so many of these games have, which you know, I think going back and playing old PS2 games not on a CRT, there's a certain level of like, oh, this doesn't look as good as I remember. But there's also something added by, you know, playing it on a not on a flat screen, not in like a digital resolution. There's like a level of, and I think like specifically like, you know, Silent Hill and Shadow of the Colossus both have like, both are really good examples of like, it kind of just like, it blurred the line somewhat literally. Mm-hmm. Like it did a really good job of like kind of creating just an atmosphere. And yeah, I don't know. I think
you're completely spot on. I think like some of it was sort of lost in translation when they remastered it. And, you know, like the better graphics don't necessarily make for better visuals all the time. Like I think there was something like really beautifully minimalist about everything about this game, from the sort of facial animations to the world design in general, was just kind of empty and vacant. And that's what made the encounters feel so magical. Like you would occasionally see like a bird or a lizard or something like that, but then you'd turn the corner and see this thing that was the size of a skyscraper and you had to kill it. And there's just something about that just gives me chills because I don't think anyone's ever truly recaptured that feeling. And we've gotten a bunch of awesome open world games and great Zelda games and great adventure games and stuff like that, but like Shadow of the Colossus is just such a special thing to me. It is just intrinsically connected to the PS2 as a whole. I remember playing it with like one of my best friends at the time. It was one of the last games we played together before he moved away. And I just love it. It's just a really special, really magical game for me. So yeah, thank you to the PS2 for giving me that.
It's so crazy that they pulled that off on the PS2, just in general. A little bit on the happier, kind of crazier kind of things that I didn't even know about. From Michael Hamm, PlayStation 2 is the first console I ever bought wholly with my own money. That wasn't from a pawn shop. Shout out to pawn shops out there. That's where I got my copy of Ocarina of Time. I saved up my summer work money to get Gran Turismo 3 bundle so I could hear Snoop Dogg rap about having a PT Cruiser in the game. This is a real thing. I listened to the track after seeing this comment. Thank you for sharing this with me, because that is was wild. I forgot about this or didn't know about this.
I think this is the most fun anyone's ever had with Gran Turismo or a PT Cruiser. That's like really like,
just wild.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world. That ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
And then Calvin AG, or Calvin Ag, Christmas 2001, the original Metal Gear Solid quickly became one of my favorite games of all time, and I absolutely could not wait to play the sequel. When I came home from college, all I wanted to do was play it. I said hi, a quick hi to my family, shut my bedroom door, and spent the next 3 days eating, breathing, and thinking about Metal Gear Solid 2. The twists, the turns, the insanity of that game is something I will never forget, for better and for worse. Mm. Max, you're a big Metal Gear fan,
yeah,
right?
this thing that Calvin's describing is very specifically, probably where my fondest PS2 memories lie. The summer leading up to MGS2 coming out, and like, it's hard to point to a game. It's definitely like very rare for a game to make such a massive technological and stylistic leap between entries like this. The first one is basically like a, you know, somewhat 3D isometric thing with some cinematic angles. And this one has like some absolutely bonkers systems in it. Like, just there's so much detail. Like, I mean, the, you know, technologically speaking, the graphics are just miles ahead. And then there's this, like, there's so much, so many like weird little, you know, Kojima-esque details. And I think it was so much because the first one was, you know, a huge success stateside. And then they were like, yeah, here's your blank check, go nuts. And yeah, this one's divisive, obviously. I think, you know, Snake Eater's the one that people typically gravitate towards, but this one is just so special, like so out there. And I think it also, like, not to get too weird about it, but like, its whole thing about like questioning reality and just the nature of information warfare, which is especially relevant in this day and age, was really, really, really heavy a couple months after 9/11. Like, It was a very, I mean, this is a game where they had to change the ending because it originally ended with Arsenal Gear crashing into downtown Manhattan. And they just had to kind of comp that out last minute. So
it was weirdly omnipotent in a lot of ways. Like, I think what you just said too about the sheer technical leap between MGS 1 and 2, like, we don't get that anymore unless a franchise takes a couple of generations off and returns. Like, it is extremely rare. I mean, look at like the PlayStation sequels now, right? We have like Spider-Man, we've got Horizon, we've got God of War. Like, these are games that level up, like, you know, the new Horizon, Ragnarok, Spider-Man 2, like, they level up, but they are not leaps on this level. Like, this is just,
well, you could say going from like God of War 3 and Ascension to God of War 2018 kind of was that on that same kind of level.
Oh, for sure, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But it's not as common, like, to that point, like your point, Brian. It's not as common. We don't
also not as mechanical in that sense. And this one, the first one, you could go into first person and like look around, but in this one, there was suddenly like first person shooting, which was something, you know, we take it for granted now, but that was something that console games still hadn't quite figured out at that point. I think, like, you know, GoldenEye had done it. There was still like, it's, you know, weird strafing controls. You couldn't walk and shoot at the same time, which is definitely makes it hard to go back to. There's, you know, there's the Master Collection coming out pretty soon, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to have that weird, like, kind of awkward putting on clothes that don't fit feeling of just like jumping back into this and trying to play it like a modern game. But yeah, weird game, kind of divisive, definitely like a lot of infamous bait and switch in terms of who you play as. And I rolled with that. I still don't love Raiden, but it's a thing. I love Snake, but I was literally thinking about this just like earlier today, thinking about how cool Fortune was as a boss. I'm doing like Inktober, like drawing thing on Instagram, and like the theme today is Fortune, and I was like, man, Fortune kicked ass. Like, it was just, she was like a woman with a railgun who would just like show up in like a bathing suit and Doc Martens and a trench coat. And her power was, she was lucky, I guess. Like, it was like a domino thing, I think, where she just, bullets would just, you know, people's guns would backfire if they tried to shoot her or whatever. And like, just, I don't know. Yeah. My personal hype leading into that game is one of those things that will never, like, never be topped. And it may be, I don't know, maybe the finished product didn't quite deliver what I wanted, but it was something entirely different that will always stick with me. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I've known you for a long time, Max, and this is like one of those games that, like, I just connect with you. I just identified Metal Gear Solid 2 with you. Like, I've heard you talk about it so often, like, you deeply care about it, and it's like, it's ancient at this point, you know? It's like the way I talk about Resident Evil 4, which also came to PS2, but like, you know, it's just one of those things where It's not just because the game was special. It was also a time and place about, you know, the leading up to the launch, like reading all the information about it, like looking at, you know, pouring over little screenshots in game magazines and on IGN 64 or whatever.
Yeah. No, I had the issue of ESM with like the Joe Quesada cover with like a totally weird off model snake fighting Olga and like, you know, the screenshots from the E3 presentation. And then I was, you know, sneaking off to my summer camp's computer lab to look at extremely low res screenshots on IGN.com. Like it's one of those things just kind of baked into my gaming DNA or what have you.
And it's like right back to the, you know, CRT TVs of just sort of like your brain is doing a lot of filling in the blanks.
Oh yeah. No, Olga Gerlukovich on a CRT TV is a as far as you can tell, there's no uncanny valley there. That is just a
right.
It's just a living, human breathing woman. Human woman. Yep. Armpit hair and everything. Yep.
And I got one other one, Ryan Imey. I remember spending many nights at my friend's house, staying up well into the night playing SmackDown or Madden. One time in particular, though, I remember breaking my friend's PS2 because he had it on the top shelf of his entertainment center in his room. And I went to step over the cords of our controllers and my foot caught on one, and it sent the system crashing down to the floor and ruined the rest of our night.
Sounds like you laid the SmackDown on that PS2 and really maddened your friend.
God, Max.
Not to be all like kids today. We used to walk uphill both ways in the snow, you know, with ice skates or whatever. But man, yeah, a lot of you who are younger really don't know how common it was to accidentally rip a video game system out of an entertainment center or off of the top of the TV or shoot it across the floor because you or your friend was playing a game, holding a controller, and one of you would just like jolt or like a dad like, would walk in.
I gotta run to the bathroom or I forgot to take out the trash. Gotta go.
Yep.
And just...
and then you would lose your progress because it wasn't like baked into the cloud. It was just like literally like a, you know, a spinning disc.
We take for granted like wireless controllers being something you can run in front of without destroying property. And also solid state hard drives. I mean, the PS2 didn't even have a hard drive. It had a spinning disc, which I'm sure was even worse if you dropped it. It would just go fell off. Yep.
No. I mean, remember there's like consoles like the 360 where if you moved the console while the game was in it, put a nice little ring on your disc.
Yep. And you could do this weird, you know, like Cronenbergian thing where you wrapped it in like a towel and it would live another week. And then they would mail a coffin to you and you'd mail it back. And like they somehow dodged.
There were those like lawsuits. They sold those things that were like disc repair kits and it looked like a label maker with like a part of a fan on it. And you would put stuff on it. But the people were like, you can do the same thing with toothpaste. And you're like, I'm going to get toothpaste out, rub it all over my PlayStation games. Like, what could go wrong?
I mean, that we were ragging on the list of DVDs coming into PlayStation Plus before, but the fact that the PS2 was a DVD player was it is so hard to express how fascinating and powerful and incredible it was to not only get a brand new video game console, but one that also doubled as a brand new medium to watch movies in a way you'd never, in a quality you'd never seen them before. Another thing we just won't get anymore. Cause like, I don't know, we started the show talking about a digital only PS5 that you can buy a disc drive for. And at no point was I thinking like, oh, you know what I can't wait to do with that disc drive is like watch, you know, Anaconda's on it. on DVD. But like back then, like the whole idea of like getting a new medium, like, and it's, you know, we got it a little bit with like, you know, 4K discs and we got it way less with UMDs, but that just doesn't happen anymore. Like in the digital future we're heading towards now, like you get a new console and it just, you know, like my, you know, your Switch has Hulu on it or whatever. I don't even think it has Netflix. And then like your PS5 has a bunch of streaming apps. Maybe you, you know, have a Blu-ray collection for it, but like those are all known quantities. This was like, you could get a DVD player that could play Resident Evil 4.
Yeah, because like the PS1 didn't play DVDs or I think you could listen to
CDs.
CDs and music, but
it played CDs. And one thing was that I think the RCA out was like a big deal at the time because you could hook it up to like a legit mixer or whatever.
Speaker. And stuff. Yeah. But yeah. I don't know about you guys. I love my PS2, but yes, Brian, 100% to your point. Like when you bought a PS2, it literally was like a home entertainment system. It wasn't just a gaming console. And yes, the newer consoles have been more of that and they're kind of leaning towards it, but it's more for granted now than it was back then, because back then it meant something, because you could convince your parents, for those of us that were younger during that time, they're like, hey, if we get this, we can also watch movies on it. Like, it's not just for me to play games. Granted, I never allowed anybody else to watch movies on it unless I was watching a movie, because that was meant for my game time. But I loved my PS2. I spent a whole summer mowing lawns and doing chores and doing everything, saving. I had saved up birthday money and I used to get like rewarded for straight A's in school, so I'd get a little bit of money from that. And I saved it all up for the PS2 that summer, or that summer before the PS2, and bought my PS2 on my own. And I freaking just love that thing to death. I got my dad bought me the bouncer with it, which is one of those guilty pleasures of games. Yep. I love the bouncer. It is not the best game that Square Soft, I believe this was before the Square Enix merger.
That was Square Hard. That was for punching people, doing bouncing.
Square was definitely, actually, I think Square actually was Light Punch Max.
Man, we just really doubled down on that. Just kept going there.
Both of you, round of applause. That was an incredible back and forth. Good 1-2 punch.
But yeah, I got like the bouncer, and I think I think I got the first Ratchet and Clank, and like I freaking loved it. Like, it just really opened up my world for gaming. Like, before that I had the 64. Mm-hmm. I had skipped the PS1 just because that's what my parents bought. And I told the N64 story on NVC a couple weeks ago when we talked to our memories of the N64. So go check that out if you want to hear how much jerks my parents were when buying me an N64. It was great. Right. It was a wonderful Christmas. But yeah, I loved my PS2. And the only thing I didn't have at the start, though, was a memory card. Because, again, kids take for granted that your memory is installed in your console already. We had to buy separate memory cards back in the day. And
they would occasionally die, and you would lose everything.
Didn't PS2 need its own? It needed like new ones as opposed to the PS1 or something. Or could
yes,
you,
correct. You yeah. could use the PS1 memory cards on the PS2, but they would only save files for PS1 games.
That's right.
So you had to have specific ones for that. Yeah. So, but yeah, I love my PS2. I'm sad I still don't have it to this day, because like it just died after like 15-20 years. But I mean, it survived quite a long time.
And I've thought about buying one of those little slim ones just to have in my office if I want to.
Yeah,
PS2 or watch DVDs. Just
something that gave me like immense nostalgia the other day. Speaking on what we were just talking about, somebody tweeted out a list. It was like if you just go on Twitter and you type in PS2 memory card, like the top thing that comes up is a PlayStation 2 save icon gallery.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's awesome. It's all these like low poly, like there's the three-eyed mm-hmm. fish from the Simpsons. There's, you know, Rayman. There's like a Mega Man helmet. There's just like a, you know, like a a Ratchet.
Like, yep.
Like and every one of these games. Like, yeah.
And some of them were like animated and moved and stuff when you looked at them, which was really cool. And other ones were just like little squares or whatever.
Yeah.
And like I think Kingdom Hearts was like a rectangle.
There was a really Sora's cool face. Like a like collectability concept to that, like an aspect to it that mm-hmm. I really liked. That it felt like a little, like you had a, you know, a bunch of little toys in a box every time you would look at your memory card. And it just like really illustrates like this was absolutely, and they haven't really let up since, but like this was PlayStation and all their third parties truly firing on all cylinders for the first time. Like this was a console that had like, you know, not at the same level, but it had like 3D platformers like the N64 did, and it had JRPGs like the N64 didn't. Like, and it got shooters, it got, you know, it wasn't the most technically impressive console. Like, there were obviously others at the time that were doing certain things better than, you know, in terms of like shaders or whatever, but like, who cares? Like, this was one of those systems that got every single game that was worth getting at the time, with rare exceptions of like a few first party games coming to the competitors. Like, Xbox hadn't really gotten to a point yet where they were like, you know, an absolute serious threat. And Nintendo, I would argue, had like stumbled a little bit. Like, I love the 360. I love the GameCube and stuff like that. I think that we got like some like really awesome libraries there. GameCube and 360 were
original
like
Xbox during this time, but yeah.
Like, which, you know, a lot of those systems were doing things like more impressively, stronger and stuff like that. But like the PS2 just got a library that was unmatched, and the sales showed. Like, people were buying people like this, the, you know, the attach rate for software on this thing was through the roof. Like people would buy a PS2, they'd buy a ton of movies, they'd buy a ton of games, and they were set. And like, it's just so, if you look at the library, like look up a list of like the top 100 PS2 games, and like that system got every game worth getting. Like,
yeah, that's a really, that's a funny thing to do, to look at sort of like the best games per system and like how deep that bench is. And like PS2 just keeps going. You look at something like, I don't know, like Game Boy or Game Boy Advance, and it's like there's some really good stuff at the top, and then there's a lot of shovelware. Like there's a lot of stuff that just, it falls off pretty quick. But PS2 is one of those ones that's pretty hard to.
Yeah, its library was just massive. Like if there was, you couldn't throw a rock in a game store and find something that wasn't at least decent.
Yeah,
on the PS2.
You shouldn't be throwing like, rocks in game stores anyway, though. That's frowned upon. Yeah, that'll get you kicked out of GameStop. Anyway,
just pulling up, I was gonna real quick pulling up like the top 10 on IGN's best PS2 list. We've got God of War at 10, Okami at 9, Final Fantasy 10, Silent Hill 2, Metal Gear Solid 2, Grand Theft Auto Vice City, which is like, we just talked about the PS2 for like a half an hour. GTA was like, again, one of those things.
Oh,
like,
man,
PS2 is where you play GTA games. Resident Evil 4, Shadow of the Colossus, Metal Gear Solid 3, and GTA San Andreas. Like, just, that's just the top 10. And then you could go up to 50, 100 if you wanted to. Like, there's just so many good games on that system.
Yep. Yeah.
Now, while we're talking about big, huge open world games, we were all kind of just, you know, chatting like we do without microphones and cameras involved about underrated open world games. And I figure we could go around and share just a couple of those real quick. Jada, I think you have the correct answer here. What is it?
Oh, 100%. I have the correct answer. And anybody who disagrees can tune off of this podcast forever. No, just kidding. My open world game of choice that's underrated is Sleeping Dogs. This game is just, it's a masterclass in open world gameplay. All the side events feel wonderful. The story is awesome. The action, the minute-to-minute gameplay is fantastic. The story is solid. There's so many cool little quirky, weird things that you'd get in like a Yakuza game, or you know, Grand Theft Auto's like weirder stuff that you'd get in those. It really kind of echoed that true crime games we used to get back in the day, like, but up another notch. Yeah. Like it's one of the earlier games that used some of the like takedowns and environmental takedown stuff on
the PS2. So good. Like, yeah, this began as True Crime Hong Kong, and then it got dumped by Activision, scooped up by Square Enix. We got this phenomenal game that probably should have just been called the most underrated open world game of all time, because I feel like more people would have bought that than a game called Sleeping Dogs, which sounds like some Nintendogs knockoff or something. but yeah, this game is so good. Anybody who hasn't checked it out, like, keep an eye out. It is regularly like $5 on sale. Jump on roll the dice, give it a shot. The DLC is also phenomenal. There's one whole thing that's basically like Thriller divided by Big Trouble in Little China, which is you fight hopping vampires. Very cool.
It's so wild. I love it.
Brian, what's your underrated open world game?
Same thing as I did before when I was thinking about PS2 games, but like when you asked me the question, I went with the first game that popped in my head, and I'm sticking with it. The Saboteur. And I feel like this game is like truly, truly slept on. And also, like, I don't even know if you can buy it anymore. Like, Sleeping Dogs is regularly on sale. I don't think you can buy The Saboteur. Like, I don't think you can open up the digital shops or on any of these consoles. Maybe it's still on Steam. But this game launched in 2009. It was one of those, you know, a company outside of Rockstar is trying to make an open world crime game, and they're trying to take their own spin on it. And the story here is that you are basically in like a Nazi occupied France, and everything is black and white and red. But by kind of clearing out zones and doing story stuff and taking over districts and restoring them to once they what were, you literally bring color back into the world. There's also a lot of like burlesque stuff in this game.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask, what are we?
Children,
avert your eyes.
This one was notable because it had DLC where you could pay to remove the tops for the burlesque in the burlesque locations.
That's right.
It was like,
okay,
if you wanted nudity, like, you could pay for that.
Yeah,
like in this.
Honestly, there should be like a subreddit or a support group or both for anyone who did that. Show yourselves. You know, like that should be public knowledge. But otherwise, like, traversal in this game was awesome because it had like the climbing of an Assassin's Creed, but like the carjacking and the shooting of like a GTA game, right? Like Ezio's great, and I love Assassin's Creed games. Those guys don't get guns and they don't steal vehicles, really. Every now and then you get a horse, but like that's about it. But I remember like one of my favorite things about this game was eventually like you start getting really powerful and really good, and you could take over Nazi turrets and use them against basically like, you know, airfare and stuff like that. And anyone who was coming at you, you could take down. So I remember just like being camped on a roof and just shooting down Nazi planes for like an entire afternoon. And people would kind of climb up to kill me and I'd kill them. And it was just like a full hour and a half of me just being like, I'm killing it. I'm taking down everybody in this town. And it was like, the story was super fun. It's just a really, really slept on open world game. It had a lot of great ideas and I guess also nudity. And it sucks that you can't buy it now. And also, yeah. if you bought that DLC to show the boobies, you have to tell everybody what your name is and put a picture of yourself.
You have online. To disclose that. All right. So future friendships.
Not sure how to transition from that. But I like Lego Marvel Superheroes a lot. I think that's a very good open world game. The later Lego games kind of they mess around with like larger hub areas, and obviously the missions are kind of in their own little sections. As a longtime Marvel fan, this is, I still think, one of my favorite Marvel games ever because it managed to sidestep the weird, crappy politics between like Fox and Disney and who owned rights to which. And it's like you can have, you can have Captain America and Venom and Wolverine all hanging out together, and they're not, you know, worried about, you know, whose divorced parents want them for which weekends. And it's, it's got some. I mean, it's there's stuff in here that made me hope that we were getting Lego sets of it. I think there's rumors they're going to do an Xavier's Mansion, which I would probably spend a bunch of money on, but this is a super fun, super cute little game. Just really, really good balance of like, hey, you know, classic throwback, Marvel references, but also, you know, it's a Lego game. You know, you kind of know what to expect. They do a good job with that. And I just, I remember like, I didn't platinum it, but I was very tempted because it has some really funny ones where transform into the Hulk enough to, or it's like transform as Stan Lee into the Hulk or something. I forget exactly, but they do some playful stuff in there. And it's, it covers a lot of bases that the second one didn't touch, because they cut out a bunch of the Fox owned characters, and I feel like was way more comics oriented than like the Marvel's Avengers Lego game, which was just tying into the movies, which felt kind of like one dimensional in that sense. But this is like, there's Moon Knight's in it. You kids love Moon Knight, don't you? Anyway, Lego Marvel Superheroes, that's a really fun one. People love to throw around the world underrated, but you know, it basically just means the one that you don't think gets enough love. And those are some that we...
Underappreciated.
Hey everyone, it's Red the Producer just hijacking the podcast real quick just to say one of the most underappreciated open world RPGs out right now is Dragon's Dogma, Dark Arisen. That's getting a sequel soon, and you should totally play it if you haven't already. It's a good mix of Monster Hunter and Dragon Age Inquisition. Really good. Gotta go. Beyond.
Now, on that note, we should probably wrap things up. We've had a good time here today. Next week, we will be talking all about Marvel's Spider-Man 2. We're going to have Simon Cardi come on, talk about his review. That'll be going up a little bit early. What is it, Monday morning?
Monday at 7 a.m.
Monday at Spider-Man o'clock. That'll be up. So mark your calendars, check it out. We're going to try to keep things nice and spoiler-free. And then the following week, we will do a big old spoiler cast. So you have time to play the game yourself, and then you can jump in and join the conversation with us. But on that note, we all got to go do some web-slinging and wall-crawling and get some pictures of Spider-Man on my desk for J. Jonah Jameson at the Daily Bugle. Anyway, thank you for watching, and beyond.
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 Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.